Well, obviously, we're into a more disturbed world again with the flare-up in the Middle East, and just some of the implications of that. You know, obviously, depending on how long this fighting lasts, we've got some disruption running through both Middle Eastern sea routes and also airspace, and so we've got an immediate lift, obviously, in oil prices. And it depends how long that's going to take to work its way through. But by the nature of these things, you've got another headwind to growth globally, and you've got a potential problem there in terms of adding to inflation pressure through supply chain problems again, looking down the track. So those are some of the issues that come out of, obviously, the disturbances we've had over the course of the weekend. If we're looking back at the US economy over this past week, well, we had some better news on inflation last week. So the May CPI came out at 0.1%, 2.4% year-on-year. It was 2.3% year-on-year the month before. So you've got the annual inflation rate, CPI inflation rate, hovering in that mid-2s area. But bearing in mind that much of the reason why inflation's held down was before the disruption of this past week, we've had energy prices which have fallen a long way, and they were contributing to this pullback running through the inflation rate. You can see this a little bit more clearly in the core CPI when you take out food and energy costs. That doesn't look quite so good. It was still up only 0.1% the most recent month, but the year-on-year is just steady at 2.8%. That's well above the Fed's target. And where that's important, amongst other things, is just looking at what the Federal Reserve will be doing this week. They have their meeting on Wednesday this week. The Fed, after starting to reduce interest rates, has paused over these last few months, and currently the funds rate is at 4.5%, and the expectation is it's going to keep it there at 4.5% because there's still more of a potential inflation threat in the United States as they look forward, rather than, you know, the risks that might be there in terms of economic growth. So yeah, that's one factor that we're watching for next week. Just one or two of the other data reads last week too. One thing we'll see in Q2 relative to Q1 in the US is we're going to get a rebound in GDP growth. Now it's largely related to international trade. What happened in the US before and leading up to Liberation Day with those announcements of all those tariffs, even though they've been wound back somewhat, you know, companies did react in the initial stages in the United States, and they bought forward a lot of their purchases of imports. Well, when you bring forward import demand, that's somebody else's GDP and detracts from US GDP. So one of the main reasons why the US had a negative GDP growth rate in the first quarter, it's only minus 0.2% annualized, was that the trade account was pulling against what was otherwise still reasonably good domestic spending demand in the US economy. Well, in Q2, that's going to bounce in the opposite direction because we've had the pull forward of imports. They got more than they need for the time being, so you've got a reduction running through that in terms of import demand running through the GDP read as you get into Q2. We won't get Q2 figures until, obviously, we get to the end of July because we're still in the tail end of Q2. But the Atlanta Federal Reserve, they do what they call their GDP Now survey, and that looks at recent economic indicators and gives an indication of where GDP growth is going to go to in Q2. And their figures, they brought it out again last week, are looking at 3.8% annualized positive growth. It's not that the US is growing that strongly, it's simply that rebound factor that runs through. But there's, you know, reason to expect that we will get some better data for a period there out the US, and that's another factor which is obviously playing as far as the Federal Reserve's concerned. We also saw June Michigan consumer sentiment. Their survey came out, and it had a reasonable bounce to 60.5 from 52.2. So, you know, that may seem a puzzle when you're looking at all these protests that are running around the US and the political fractures that are occurring in the United States. but you still have to bear in mind that US people are fairly much fully employed. They're getting very good wage growth, well above the inflation rate for the time being. Asset prices have been rising. Sure, they took a bit of a knock on Friday with the increased disruption in the Middle East, but otherwise asset prices have been rising, and not just the equity market. House prices are up about 5% year on year in the United States as well. So all of these factors mean that, you know, there's the ability to spend for households if they're feeling reasonably comfortable. And that survey suggests that, you know, they're just feeling a little bit more comfortable about things and you may spend more freely. This all flies in the face of people at the World Bank who have been, you know, working downwards their global economic growth forecasts. That's because, you know, it's traditional modelling. And basically in traditional modelling, you get a big demand shock, which comes from the US imposing higher tariffs. It becomes a supply-side shock for the US, which makes matters worse in terms of controlling inflation. But it's a big demand shock for everybody else. And so, you know, that's the way in which the you know, those forecasts always work. But there's always nuances that can surprise. And so I'll talk about that a bit with Australia as well. But in the case of the US, it's largely that you've got a fully employed workforce with good wage growth. Now, that has to count for something. And so, you know, waiting to see just how all that pans out as we go forward. This week, you know, amongst apart from the Fed, you know, we've also got May retail sales coming out in the United States. There is an expectation those will come down a bit. So the consensus forecast is minus 0.6% after a 0.1% increase the month before. But core retail sales are expected to lift by 0.2%. Still, you know, a touch softer there if it happens, running through those particular numbers. We've got several housing indicators. They all look reasonably firm. And this is a story not just for the US, but particularly so for us. We have factors, you know, when you get a lot of uncertainty running through markets, and particularly such as we've got at the moment, you know, people go to what they think are safe haven asset classes. And, you know, that's typically in the past has been things like gold. It's not surprising the gold price is up. But, you know, also there's a good reason to come back to local housing. You know, that's an asset class which is, you know, not necessarily vulnerable to all the forces which you're worrying about coming from overseas. And on top of that, you know, it's been a little bit easier to get mortgages. Not quite so much in the United States because they had 30-year fixed mortgages. You know, the housing sector there is, if anything, picking up. And so, again, it's another one of those factors which is just going to be helpful going forward. We had the June National Association of Home Builders Index came out last week. It went from 34 to 35. We had May home building permits. Going back a month ago, they were down 4%, but they're expected to rise slightly for the current month of May. Housing starts were up 1.6% going back to April, and expected to be probably flat, but not too bad for the month of May. Just moving then to China, and you know, China obviously is one of those economies where, you know, one of their big growth drivers over a long period of time has been their trade account. And so, you know, that is being hit by, you know, what the US is doing. And so we had May exports came out last week. They were up, but less than expected, 4.8% year on year. They were up 8.1% year on year the month before. So they are starting to peel back. The import side is a bit softer too. Down 3.4% year-on-year after being down 0.2%. We also had their CPI producer price index, and you know, the May CPI was minus 0.2%, minus 0.1% year-on-year, so they've got mild deflation running through there. Their producer price index, minus 3.3% from minus 2.7%, so we've got a bit of deflation just running through that too. It speaks of, you know, sort of oversupply in the economy relative to demand. And when you get a big demand shock, which obviously US tariff announcements, even though we've got the negotiations still going with China, that don't appear to be getting particularly far. But when you get these big demand shocks coming through your external account, which has been a major driver, you have to loosen policy. You have to make sure that you're really boosting your household sector to spend more. You have to bring interest rates down. China's not doing any of that particularly effectively at the moment. It has grandiose plans for matching the US in high tech and all these sorts of things, but it needs some hardcore demand to come through, and it needs that to come through areas such as retail sales. They have made some fiscal initiatives, but they're relatively minor in terms of boosting household spending. They've had a bit of a lift going back last month. We're up to 5.1% year on year. They need to be running pretty close to 9 or 10 and to be able to really offset some of the damage which is coming through elsewhere in their economy. We get those figures coming out later today. And if anything, retail sales growth probably came back to, we think, 4.9% year on year. Fixed asset investment spending, which was the way they tended to boost the economy in the past, well, it's been constrained because of obviously the problems running through the property sector. It was up 4% year on year. Again, the market thinks they'll come back to about 3.9% for May. And industrial production running a little bit above 6, expected to come back to about 6. That they need these to run relatively stronger than that, as I say, to offset the problems which they're facing in this world where one of their big growth drivers is being hit hard by the likely tariff arrangements which will eventually settle into place over the next month or two. Moving to Australia. And it's interesting that we had May NAB Business Conditions, Business Confidence Survey came out. This hasn't been hit particularly hard in the current world environment. So business conditions came back to zero from plus two, not dramatic. And business confidence, which looks ahead, actually improved. It went from minus one to plus two. And we got a similar small improvement running through consumer sentiment as well. We got the Westpac Consumer Sentiment Survey came out for June. That lifted by 0.5%, and that was after an increase of 2.2% going back the month before. So there's some indication there that, if anything, the household sector is just feeling a little bit more comfortable about things. And in a way, why wouldn't they? Their borrowing costs, they have come down a little with the cash rate changes. There's the promise of more to come there. We are getting real wage growth running through. That's helpful. All these factors, if anything, should provide some support as far as Australia is concerned. And this week, the key reading this week for us is the labour force reading. And again, one of those factors going back a month ago, you can't get much stronger. We had April employment rose by 89,000 in 1 month. Market thinks we're still going to rise again around 20,000 for the month of May, with the participation rate very high at 67.1%, holding there, and the unemployment rate holding very low at 4.1%. So still this very, very, very tight labour market running through, indicative of a pretty fully employed economy with increasingly good wage growth. A bit like the US, housing, I think, is going to be the safe haven asset class, which is going to get quite a boost really over the course of the next few months, and that in turn is going to be one significant buffer against these headwinds which are coming from overseas through the trade account. Moving to Europe, and we get Centix Investor Comp. We've got Centix Investor Confidence in Europe. It improved pretty significantly to plus 0.2%, to plus 0.2 from minus 8.1. So investors are getting more confident in Europe. And the many industries which are actually picking up in Europe at the moment, not least of which are the defence industries. We had April industrial production came out, not so good there. We had a 2.4% lift going back the month before. It fell by 2.4% for the most recent month. And we had April trade balance, which has actually peeled back. So you can see that starting to suffer, but it's still a positive. They've still got a surplus there, 9.9 billion euro, but it was back from a whopping 37.2 billion euro going back the month before. But that was largely to do with, you know, the US was pulling in as many imports as they could. As a result of that, export trade out of Europe was very, very strong that particular month. Accounts for why you had that very, very large rise there. This week in Europe, we've got Q1 wages growth coming out latest today. It's been rising pretty well and is strong in real terms, remembering that the latest European inflation rate is 1.9%. Well, Q1 wages, they rose 4.1%. So you've got very strong real growth in wages running through Europe. It'd be interesting to see what the figure is today. We also get things like preliminary consumer confidence coming out later in the week. That one has been improving a little, but is still very much in negative territory. And we also get another central bank, Bank of England, and they meet this week as well. That's another bank which is worrying more about inflation than some of the hits to growth. And so they're currently at 4.25% for their base rate. They look as if they're going to hold at 4.25%. So very mixed range of factors, but obviously this week, you know, the disruption in the Middle East is going to be front and centre. If anything, that will hit some of the exuberance which has been running through risk assets. It may make people concentrate more on safe haven assets, and in Australia's case it's just another factor which is probably going to lift housing demand as we go further forward.